Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Good morning, Kathy Anderson with Empower House here with us again this morning. Kathy, good to have you here. Good morning.
Good morning, Ted. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. We're going to get into and kind of get the pulse from you about what you're seeing and just talk about ways that we can all get involved in help the work of Empower House. But the other day, Giving Tuesday was a big day where a lot of us could get involved with nonprofits in the area. How did Giving Tuesday go for Empower House?
Giving Tuesday was a great showing of support from so many people in the community. We were so humbled by how many people chose to give online, financially, and also, if you didn't know it, we had a collection at our office. Our public outreach office is not open these days because of COVID and social distancing, so there's a lot of remote work being done from people's homes. So we did open the office that day to our collection, and folks came out and made a lot of deliveries for supplies for the shelter.
That was, we have talked about the whole April shower for the shelter program, and this was a chance to if you've been collecting things, to just stop on by. That must have been nice, just to even from a distance see some of your supporters and people that you know.
Yeah. So the Spotsylvania Sheriff's Office came out, so that was really a wonderful surprise. Two cruisers came and spent time with us, two deputies on the road, and that was just a great showing of support. And then folks trickled in. It was a rainy and cold day. So I also think that with the virus, I think there was a lot of people being sensible in that, maybe it is best to, go on the computer and give online. For those that came out, that was tremendously joyful for our staff. I mean, our employees also had a great chance to catch up with one another. So even with the rain and the cold, it was a joyful day. We had one particular family come by with snacks for movie night at the shelter and had really... They had tried to find out how many, could use the movie night, and the fact that movie night rotates at the shelter, so one family will go in the living room and sort of have it for the evening, and then the movie is chosen and the snacks, like from a theater. And so all those things are supplied to the family. They enjoy the living room for the evening, and then when they leave, our staff clean that room for the next family. So I think it was joyful all around from Tuesday's Day of Giving for folks to come and drop off those supplies and help, and joyful for our team to see all of that community support.
Boy, and Kathy, sometimes we probably overthink things about, well, if I do this or that really wouldn't be, that's not very much. Something as simple as that can really go a long way. And we often talk about, the things that you need at the shelter are the things we all use. But that's just really such a great illustration of just something that's simple, but boy, goes a long way.
Yeah, I think simple at this time when people are so isolated, so having to stay in order to be safe at our shelter, that means being very isolated. Certainly people will encounter one another, going from, laundry to making something to eat. But everything's very structured right now, so they're very, they're trying to make sure all of those things are done in shift so that folks don't congregate, which is really unusual for our building because, one of the great things about it is it does provide these open spaces aside from like the the suites where their bedrooms are, you know, it does provide these great places to congregate. But right now, that is definitely not recommended for everyone's health. So having something like movie night, our shelter services coordinator, she thought that that would be something the families would really enjoy, and it's turned out to be a big hit. So the fact that the community is asking us, well, what do you need most? So those that contributed financially allow us to apply those funds where they're needed most. And those that wanted to give with items checked in to find out what would be helpful.
Okay, so that answers my question. I was going to ask you, what do you need most? And like you say, I think a lot of people in these times, where in the past I might be more apt to just come on by and give you some things. You know, at this time, you are able to really focus in on what you need if someone does just make a monetary donation.
Oh, yes. I mean, the folks that gave online really gave us a lot of courage to continue the work that we're doing. I know when you and I began talking about, you know, the coronavirus early on, we were talking about how many of the people in our housing program kind of were helping. We were going way over budget and still are every month on our assistance for their housing. So, you know, I looked at the numbers this morning, and during this time period, we've had 37 adults and 67 children in housing. And that means when they're transitioning from the crisis to being on their own feet, we've assisted them to get in with financial resources. We've assisted them with their rental payments and all of this. Well, usually over a period of time, people, you know, reduce our contribution and they eventually absorb the entire cost on their own. Well, because of social distancing, because kids are home from school, because a number of folks fell sick because of their exposure in healthcare settings, you know, we made the decision that as long as we could, we were going to support and help them remain in housing at whatever full amount they requested. And so that has given them great comfort that their housing is stable right now. And it's also made it very challenging for us financially. The Community Foundation, their disaster relief fund, was able to give some financial contributions to the rent assistance. They've been wonderful about trying to figure out how to help get us more financial resources from those that already were funds that were supporting us. And so, you know, I think between that and the community stepping up during this time with April Shower for the Shelters, those that have assisted financially are really giving us that courage to make sure that we're on the right path of supporting families despite that financial hit that we're taking.
Well, and I think as far as just numbers go, I know for the first few weeks, I remember we talked about it, and it was around $10,000 extra you were needing. And last week, you mentioned an even higher number than that. So I think it's continuing to go up, and so there is a need that the community does need to know about.
Absolutely. It's actually $13,500 more per month than what we were spending on a monthly basis. Every year, you know, we have a budget. We know how much financially is coming in from governmental sources that support these programs. We've made a request to the state, along with our other providers here locally, for increased rental assistance dollars. We have not seen that come through. We hope to see that come in the future, and that would be a tremendous relief. But right now, you know, we're going on faith that that we will be able to support our families, and certainly the local contributions that have been coming in give us confidence. They haven't so far matched everything we're spending, but there have been other, you know, ways that people have contributed financially for other types of sheltering that we've been doing. The state did provide some additional funding, so all that we're spending extra there is being supported. So really, it's our housing program right now that we're continuing to say we're going to make this investment, and we will, go on a leap of faith that those resources will come in to help.
Boy, and that's for so many people, that that's such a concern and in a burden right now. And you have been able to right now lift that, like you said a few minutes. You know, you've been able to lift that from people there. I guess it's you know, all we can do is talk about it, and it's out there, and you hope the community does respond, and it is a real need. And boy, and Powerhouse is there. But it's a as this goes on, it does get to be a concern for everybody.
Well, housing stability is a scare for a number of people with the layoffs, with people going on unemployment. We definitely are seeing that with our population. You know, where our fear for our population is they've already been in crisis, they've already been homeless because of the domestic violence. They've already put their faith and trust in us and our building up there, both emotional and strength resources that they already have internally, and their financial resources. So to have this kind of setback with the COVID-19 is something that everybody's experiencing, or a lot of people are, and our population, to see them again feel like their whole world is being turned upside down and that they might not financially make it through this is heartbreaking. So all the help that's being provided by the community, the support that we're able to provide when we talk with them, it's clear in their words back to us how much they feel supported. I know our housing team said, you know, sometimes trust is a challenging thing to build. Not everyone trusts that the government or that the community agencies are really there for them. And so they come in really doubting that. So we've been really pleasantly surprised how much they've been telling us what it means for them, that we are checking in with them constantly, that we're there for them, and that they really feel that we care about them. Because we do, and our community does too. And it's a great, great thing to witness.
Wow. What a great testimony there about the work that you are doing. And powerhouseva.org to find out how you can get plugged in and help out the work of Empowerhouse. Empowerhouseva.org. Kathy Anderson with Empowerhouse here this morning. We need to take a break. When we come back, we will continue on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Music. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubert.
Kathy Anderson with Empowerhouse here this morning, empowerhouseva.org. Empowerhouse deals with domestic violence and the issues surrounding that. And Kathy, just for the person who doesn't know about what you do, because we talk about, you know, we'll talk about advocacy this morning and, you know, children's services, and we talked about housing. There are a lot of different, to say domestic violence, just mm-hmm. That's sort of the overall overarching thing of what you do, but you do a lot, mm-hmm. Just a lot of services that you're involved with.
Right. So the services are all aimed at survivors of domestic violence and their children. We also have a batterers intervention program, which means that those that are court ordered from assault and batteries and other reasons why folks find themselves in the courthouse for domestic violence, they will also come to us for these weekly groups that we have for education and intervention for domestic violence. So all of our services for victims of domestic violence and their children are free, they're confidential, and we receive over 1,500 calls a year on our 24-hour hotline. I know that you've heard this before, but 1 in 4 women will experience severe physical violence at the hands of an intimate partner. And that was severe violence. So really the numbers are even higher if you look at domestic violence in general. So all of our services are set up to assist survivors, and often that looks like having that robust conversation where we're listening to folks who haven't been listened to in the relationship because they've been there have been efforts to diminish them. And so that's what domestic violence is all about. So in our services, in addition to the hotline, we have in-person services at the courthouses, at sheriff's offices, at our public outreach office, at our support groups, teen groups, children groups. And we also, you've heard us talk a lot about the shelter, so mm-hmm. we could spend some time sharing more about the domestic violence shelter, but we don't often also talk about the work that our employees are doing in the schools, so providing education on healthy relationships, the warning signs of teen dating violence, some anti-bullying work. And so, I'm sure that there are things that I didn't share, but trying to really be comprehensive about our education programs and our response so that those that are experiencing something have an outlet, somebody to talk to, somebody to check in with, and someone to help them look at the risk in that relationship and put together plans that will increase their safety, that will really look at what's been happening, what might happen next, and how might they plan in such a way that violence in their lives that they don't have any control over because they're not the ones committing the violence, but that they plan in certain ways so that as they navigate their next steps, that they can do that as safely as possible.
And you know, Kathy, I've wondered just with school out all this time, and when you think about the fact, and in hoping the kids are able to go back this fall, but the fact that they've been out since March and will be out through August, I just think about the component that you talked about that you do have in the schools and how important that is to teach to teach kids the right and wrong. And because so often these kids, they don't. The model that they have at home is a model that just perpetuates problems all throughout life and goes generation to generation. And you kind of worry about, you talk about they're not in school and so they're not getting meals and some of those are legitimate concerns. But this is also a legitimate concern. This is a long time between when you're able to, really teach some of these kids some of the right ways to act in a relationship.
Yeah, I think all of our systems are very concerned about kids who are exposed in that way, and certainly the parents, that they're safe. So whether it's the schools or law enforcement, the courts, I think there are a number, social services, there are a number of people certainly worried about the kids who benefit from our services and benefit from our education programs. I think going forward, we'll be coming up with creative planning with our partners around reaching young people and helping them to get the information they need. But I would say there isn't a substitute for being in the classroom and kind of sharing the information that so many are able then to take home with them and apply. So I know we've been speaking with the Stafford Sheriff's Office in some prevention conversations, and I know that we'll be talking more with the school folks as we go into the new year. What does that look like, and how will we creatively work together to include some components of the healthy relationship work that we've been doing?
But the other thing, the staff that you have, and we've talked to a few in the last few weeks, but over the years you have brought them in studio frequently. What a great staff you have! I mean, they are just the areas that they all work with. They're just passionate about what they do, and always looking for new ways to be able to new and creative ways to reach the people they're working with.
We have top-notch employees. We have dedicated, skilled, creative, smart, really hardworking group who are dedicated to our mission. And that means being dedicated to the people we help. So whether it's people we help or it's the youth who we engage with and who really absorb the information around healthy relationships and risk factors, we have a team who's really passionate, as you said. And so Folks have been really creative with advocacy services. That daily and weekly outreach to their partners has been tremendous, so that when we're working with a survivor, because we have been, as you know, our hotline calls increased, and because our in-person services are not as robust, that means spending a lot of time on the phone with helping our folks, victims of domestic violence, navigate services. And so we spend a lot of time on the phone with our partners, checking in, letting them know that someone's coming their way, what's open right now, how to gain access, and really helping that survivor, work through those systems, because, you know, the courts are open and they're open for emergency types of things. Well, domestic violence is an emergency type of thing. And so helping them identify where those offices are and who to talk to, sometimes being able to give them a name, really looking at the phone numbers that are published and the websites and making sure that all of those numbers and websites point back to an actual resource they can attain. So we've been spending a lot of time with our partners in that way, and it's been kind of gratifying to see everybody come together and find a new way to serve people when in-person interactions are limited. They still exist, but they're just harder to access because putting that social distance, that 6-foot distance, or putting in the plexiglass or locking the doors and, you know, having to have them open to gain entrance to access things, it's just not as customer-friendly as it was, as you would expect.
Right, right, yeah. Kathy Anderson here with Empower Us. We're going to want to continue, and I got a few more questions on this. We'll also talk a little bit more about the hotline number is 373-9373. Is that the... I think I've got it memorized by now. I've got it memorized now after 4 or 5 weeks of this. 540-373-9373 is the hotline number. Kathy Anderson with Empower House here. She's executive director, empowerhouseva.org. More on News Talk 1230 WFVA. We need to take a quick break. We will return. It is now 8:30.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to...
Talk done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg. A Centennial Broadcasting Station. Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
Kathy Anderson here with Empower House this morning. They deal with survivors of domestic violence and their children. Which, when you described that a few minutes ago, Kathy, I thought that was a great way to describe that, because I've always just said domestic violence. And as we've talked, so much is about children and decisions. When you were talking just a few minutes ago about how so much of what you do is face-to-face and how this causes difficulties, I thought this has to – when you're dealing with someone now that you've dealt with in the past and have a long-term relationship with, or even a shorter term, but you have dealt somewhat with them, it wouldn't be as difficult. But, boy, for somebody who's had to – you know, maybe they have been in court because of an emergency order and this is all new, boy, that's got to be – that does have to be some challenges of trying to do what you do with social distancing with someone you don't know.
Yeah, I mean, our staff have a lot of anxiety around making sure that the people they're supporting feel supported. And what I mean by that anxiety is they are constantly determining what are the best ways to fully communicate support. And I think they do a fantastic job. The fact that they have some anxiety around it makes them really bring it out and effective. And they all have skills that they've used in taking their hotline calls. So they all know how to build rapport, how to bring forth that listening, helping somebody know that they're right there for them. And so they do have that experience. It is challenging when normally we would accompany somebody to the courthouse and stand by them and be able to answer some logistical questions, but a lot of that is to help them manage to get through, whether that means they will be in the courthouse facing the partner who has been that scary person in their lives, who's really terrorized them. You know, when you go to court, you end up facing that person, and that person may come with an entourage of people. And so often survivors of domestic violence are the only ones there by themselves. And so having our advocate there with them means they're not alone, even though when you're experiencing domestic violence, that's what it feels like. It feels like you're very alone. And so trying to reach out through the phone to communicate things about how to navigate, and then I'm here for you, and you can call me after. All of these things are, again, produce some anxiety for our staff. I think things that trickle back to us when folks are able to say how they're impacted by our work with them. I think one of our employees, Julie, said that one of her, the people she's assisting, is suffering from mental illness. And she said when I got off the phone with her and she told me that I am her safe space, and she knows I'll be there and that I believe her and that I will be there to support her through all of this, that gave Julie such insight and such heart that her services were effective and that they mattered, even though they couldn't be delivered in person.
Mm. Wow. That is good. And reaffirming, I'm sure for her, of just wondering, I'm doing things differently than I usually do or I've been trained to do. You know, is this really working? To hear something like that, it shows you that just that we all can be involved with people and just just showing some caring sometimes is all it takes.
Showing caring for sure. And, you know, I've said that our services are not in person. We have, you know, some of our employees have gone out at times when they've been able to and when they felt that was safe. So we've had someone who was in shelter who had been working with one of our court advocates, and she went in person to be able to really sit down and be able to have that person really relay all that she had been through. And she knew that that would be a powerful and important thing for the person she was helping to be able to do. And so even though we're very careful so that everybody's protected from the pandemic and the virus, we also have staff who are, by taking precautions, still sometimes able to navigate and provide that service that they see is needed.
Yeah. But as we talk about this, and every week we talk, and I think I'm just now starting to understand it, and you think about it in the terms of what a person just taking the pandemic away for a second, and that aside, just the fact that you're we're in a situation now where the economy is what it is. There's concern about housing and jobs, and then you start adding on you add the domestic violence component to this. Then you put a pandemic in it. That's a lot. That's a lot for anyone to be able to handle. And you just think these are truly difficult times. But boy, all of these things together for certain people, you really are a lifesaver.
Oh, absolutely. Just the triggering that's happening with the virus. In terms of a lifesaver, folks can come to the shelter. They can go through that conversation with our employees. But, you know, when they reach out and are able to talk about what they experienced and what they're about to experience, many things happen in that conversation about planning for what's next. So really picking apart what that domestic violence has looked like thus far, what's changed now, how are things going to look going forward? Those are conversations around the life-saving that you're talking about. When folks are empowered and have the information they have about what was really behind the domestic violence, they're really making choices about what steps they take next. And those steps vary for everyone. Not everyone chooses the same path. And when they're making those decisions, they're also needing to apply that lens of what will be safe. They can't control what their partner's going to do, but they can control the steps they're going to take or the ways that they're going to look at things or the reaction that they're going to apply at any moment. And so, you know, knowing all of that and knowing what's been done before, they look at how they're going to navigate going forward. It's a difficult time leaving that relationship or somebody being forced to leave their home by the courts because of the domestic violence. All of these things are challenging for all parties, challenging for that family, challenging for the courts, challenging for the victim and the victim's children. And so all of these decisions have to be made carefully with having great information and great analysis about what might happen next. And so, you know, in addition to providing shelter, our staff are always helping people navigate what might be safe for them next and how they will get through having the information they have, knowing how risky it's been, what threats have been made, you know, is there a weapon involved, all of these things. And so our staff are helping them to connect with other resources and helping them to know, you know, what each of these steps may look like in terms of their risk.
We've talked through the whole pandemic about how the calls to the hotline calls have increased. Do you also have an increase, like with Mother's Day coming up, around holidays like that, where someone just feels like, you know, here it's Mother's Day, but I don't really feel much like a mother, or things just haven't turned out like I thought? Does that trigger things too?
You know, holidays, we'll always see an increase after the holiday. What we've attributed that to is kind of everybody being together, which, you know, the pandemic is kind of creating that long holiday. So,
right.
You know, but, yeah. So if kids are off school, so Mother's Day, I don't know that we've seen a particular increase with Mother's Day. I think it's... you know, I'm just going to say no to that one. It's more like the holidays where the kids are home from school and there's a break where everybody's home. There may be more stress. There's certainly often more drinking. Mm. And while drinking doesn't cause domestic violence, it certainly lowers inhibitions and allows people to act the way that, you know, that they've been working up to act. But, I wouldn't say that we're going to see an increase necessarily because of Mother's Day, but the pandemic with everybody, the stay-at-home order, while it's safe at home for some people, it's not safe at home for survivors of domestic violence. And that longer period where everybody's in the home and inevitably something's not going to go well or right for somebody who's abusive, the place that they take that out on are their family members. And so, you know, it's not whether domestic violence is going to happen, it's when domestic violence is going to happen. And so being stuck at home together means the risk goes up and that there aren't outlets. People aren't able to step out of the home, go to work, have their social lives. They are literally not going to be able to get around the domestic violence that's going to happen.
Kathy Anderson with Empower House here this morning, and I guess when you think about it with the pandemic here right now, I mean that you just as you describe what it's like and just kind of just the helplessness, a pandemic just seems like it takes away even some options that all of a sudden, you, at least through this, you know, you've got to try to keep things together and try to make it through the pandemic.
Yeah. Survivors of domestic violence are experts at trying to lessen the stress or lessen, you know, it's described as walking on eggshells. I mean, you know, they're expert at trying to stave off a violent episode. But in the end, it's really not necessarily under their control. The person who uses domestic violence does it because they can. They do it to exert power over their partner. They try to control their partner, and they will look for and justify those acts of violence or of abuse. So, you know, navigating that when everybody's home, again, they might not see that there are outlets. They might not see that people care about them. They might not have their coworkers present in their lives. They are not going to be seeing family as much as they did. If they were seeing family, they're not going to see their friends. And so it feels and is bleaker than life out when there's not a pandemic going on. And that is why, because of the isolation caused by the pandemic.
And again, we mentioned it just about every week that if you suspect or just a kind word and I'm thinking of you can go a long ways. Just even the stories you tell every week, but that you've emphasized this morning.
Yeah, I mean, for as far as people being able to weather through and be resilient, people need to know that there's hope. And there's always hope with domestic violence in that so many people, I mean, oftentimes we've heard through the years, people say, well, why don't they just leave? Well, it doesn't work exactly like that. But what we do know is people do leave, and they also find ways to cope and to find an outlet. And so I think the kind word that you talked about is one of the ways that people will find hope right now. They need to know that people care about them because they're not getting that message at home from their partner. They're getting the very opposite. They're getting very destructive messages, and those messages are intended to break them down as a human being. And so any outside interaction where they realize there is someone out there that cares about them, whether it's a family member or a friend or Empower House or even a stranger, a neighbor who lets them know, hey, I was thinking about you. How are you doing? Looking forward to when we get to chat more. Anything that lets them know they're seen and they're cared about goes a long way.
373-9373 is the number to the hotline, 540-373-9373, empowerhouseva.org. Kathy Anderson here with Empower House. We need to take one final break. We will conclude when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
Opinions, we've all got them, and we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Kathy Anderson with Empower House here this morning. EmpowerHouseVA.org is the website you can go to find out much more information and really about how you can get involved. And in one of the ways to get involved is in just the extra money for that you're providing for shelter for a lot of people. Describe, before we get out of here, Kathy, just how many people you are helping out and dealing with right now.
Yeah, so in our housing program, we have 33 adults and 61 kids. So a lot of focus has been on helping them get through the pandemic, and we've talked about how their rents are now at 100% of our support as opposed to 20%, 50%, 80%. So our costs have gone up, and we're committed to helping them through the pandemic so that they don't lose their housing, that they stay stable in their housing. And as we talked about, that's $13,500 more per month than what we were spending prior to the pandemic. So, so in addition to those financial things that that we're covering and supporting people through, we also are helping them with activities. You know, how do you get your kids through this pandemic? We're all working on that and challenged by that. Our folks who are in our housing program, they're all single parents. And so they've got, you heard me say, it's 61 children for those 33 adults. So it's at least two per household. Some have five. We also have some single folks in our housing program. So we're talking about large families. And our team keeps preparing packages to drop off weekly if they can. And so they've rummaged through all of our resources and now are asking for more things. So we'll buy some of those things. But if people want to help just the children's program, the kinds of items that we're talking about are like sidewalk chalk, now that the weather is nicer, bubbles, hacky sacks, anything they can put, small items they can put in packets. I think you covered the part where we dropped off seed packets, our team did, and they now will be monitoring and working with the families to see those seeds grow. And that's a really hopeful thing, hopeful activity they've been working on. We talked about movie night at shelter, so snacks, anything you find at the movie theater, popcorn, candy, you know, not that we want everybody to be, you know, all on the junk food, but how many of us have been turning to comfort food? So, we're not alone. Our folks that, you know, are home and out of school, they also are looking for that comfort food. So nuts, Milky Way, Twizzlers, all of that. And then, you know, all of the things that we have on our registries. So our April shower for the shelter was our way of helping people know that our supplies are, we're going through them more than we have because of the kids being home from school, because people are stuck at home. And so if you go on our website, empowerhouseva.org, you'll find the two registries. We put them on Target and Walmart for easy access. You can go on there and you can see what things we're going through, the trash bags, the laundry detergent, the cleaners. They're wiping down our 10,000 square foot building, you know, twice a day, all the time in our shelter. So those cleaning supplies, those gloves, we've been going through masks, although those are hard to find. But you can see on the registries, and instead of showing up for a shower for our shelter, we're just asking that people go ahead and send those items to their homes, or they can go out shopping, contact us, and we've made arrangements to make sure those things get to the shelter. And some of us are buying sort of fresh things so that they have the quantity of things they need that they're going through.
It's great just to know some specific things, because a lot of times we hear, well, there's needs, and there's financial needs, and there's just needs. If you can, just some of those items. And if you can do both, that's great, too. Lots of stuff out there. As always, Kathy, thank you, because so many needs. And the $13,500 more dollars a month, it's you're putting a lot of people at ease. And that's something that we can all get involved with. EmpowerhouseVA.org, again, is the website, EmpowerhouseVA.org, or the hotline number if you know of someone who may be able to use that, 373-9373. Kathy Anderson, the Executive Director of Empowerhouse. Thank you, Kathy. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Ted.
That is it. Thank you for listening. We will see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own, and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.